Welcome to the Radical Lifestyle Podcast, brought to you by Generation to Generation, where you will be inspired by the past, equipped for the present, and prepared for the future as we engage in conversations with people from around the world. Hello, everyone. This is Andrew and Daphne from Generation to Generation, and our guest today is Richard Fisher. Richard, for people that don't know who you are, can you just say a bit about where you're from and what you do?
Sure. Thank you very much, first and foremost, Daphne and Andrew, for having me today on the call. So I'm born and raised in London. My mom's from Nigeria, my dad's from the US. And over the last 9 years, I founded a charity called Push, Persevere Until Something Happens. And we mentor teenagers from the age of 13 to 18 with a goal to helping young people instill confidence and help them identify their passions and then ignite those dreams by facilitating workshops and programs to help them realize their direction and where they should be going with what God's called them to do.
And for people listening that want to find out more about Push, where can they do that?
Sure. So we have a website. So we're www.justpush.org. And also we can find on Instagram and Facebook, Push Worldwide.
Okay, that link will be in the description box. So for people interested, it's there waiting for you to check out. Richard, before we talk some about this, can you talk a bit about some of your upbringing and some of your background in terms of work? Because you are heavily involved, you still are, in the finance world, but can you talk a bit about that as well?
Sure. So I'll probably go back a little bit before that, actually. So basically, I was fortunate enough to go to a private school in the UK, and so I kind of lived in this bit of a paradox where families basically based in South London, and then I was going to private school, and quite fortunate to be able to get exposed to a lot of different experiences across the country. Played in the sort of national level for hockey and football, and in that I actually failed all my GCSEs and A levels, so which I don't think my mum still knows, to be honest. I kind of somehow managed to.
Well, she might just find out now.
Uh-oh, we got breaking news here. Sorry, mum.
She's hearing. I turned out okay, but it was touch and go at the time. And so the reason I say that is because it was quite random, but I don't think it was. While in sixth form, I basically opened up the Financial Times. This must have been 1998, and there was a spread about e-commerce technologies at the time and how it was going to be the next biggest industry. And at that age, I just saw the size of the market and thought, I want to be part of that. And I actually chose my A-levels on the back of that and my degree just purely because of what I read.
So the dollar signs.
Yeah, something along those, something along those lines. I think someone else also, I feel like it could also have been God's got my attention that way, because I failed my A-levels and but still got to do my degree in Bradford University. It was there where I actually learned how I like to study. You'll see why I'm saying this, because in university, I did a degree, I did a master's, and then I got a job at Bloomberg. So what's quite fascinating is that during school I struggled, but then I did a degree and a master's in something that was highly focused on maths and coding. So it doesn't really make sense, but what I realized is just more that I liked learning in a certain way. So I got to Bloomberg and I was there for 14 years. And that basically afforded me the chance to travel around the world pretty much and work with guys in the financial sector, in the sort of large banks in the world, asset management firms in the world. And, you know, at one point I was looking after Nigeria, Ghana, then it was the Middle East and Africa. And while working in Nigeria, I had armed guards sort of greet me at the airport every week. Because I was flying every week and I'd have my own security guard. And then I'd get back to the UK and get on the bus home. So it was quite an interesting just inexperience. So
just,
I tap it,
just
tap
so you
in
don't
my,
keep your head in the clouds, you know.
Yeah, tapping my Oyster card there. well, given that the Queen's wave, I was in there, got to the airport. So, and I'm saying all this because, you know, I had all these fascinating experiences and ups and downs, and that's what propelled me to start Push, because I realized that if I could do this and go on this journey, then it means that there's a lot of young people all over the world that similar situations and various circumstances could have impacted them or limited or restricted them, that if I could help them realize their potential, realize who they are early, then it could push them into what they're called to do, what they're meant to be. And irrespective of what the challenges are, they can get through, because I did. And it's just finding out how someone sort of responds and engages with, whether that be the school, whether that be any kind of learning experience, how I can unblock their potential, if that makes sense. Yeah. So that's where this kind of journey and this passion has come from, and lots of other reasons. My mom and dad separated when I was 3 years old. So when I was growing up, I was fortunate, obviously, as I mentioned before, to go to a private school. And I think that helped with not being familiar with my dad. He's in the US. And but fast forward to when I was like 18, 19, and the internet sort of just came about, is when I started to ask Jeeves, put his name in and see if I could find him. And if anyone ever know Ask Jeeves, that was such a long time ago. Yeah. But basically in that, fast forward, I was launching Push in Washington, D.C. in 2018. And that's when I found my dad. We basically miss each other by 1 week. He passed away literally a week before I found him. But then it opened me up to this whole new family that I didn't know existed. And again, I'm sharing this because, you know, there's lots of different people who have all different kinds of challenges, but then, you know, again, we say push, persevere until something happens, because, you know, the Bible says it clearly as well in Hebrews and lots of different things in different passages, that as long as we are able to keep our faith focused on God, and, you know, in Proverbs it says, keep our face like a flint, like focus on what God's called us to do, what we're doing, and that's what we have to do, irrespective of what's around us or what's being presented to us. And that is where this comes from. It's trying to help young people identify their purpose, their passion, and, you know, we can at least steer them in that right direction and see what God does from there.
I mean, I just want to press pause on one little thing that you said, Richard, because you passed over it so quickly. You said your dad died a week before you met him, but you met a whole new family. That must have been quite devastating for you, actually.
It's an unbelievable experience. I think, you know, probably in another few years, it's probably when I'll actually, it'll probably hit me properly, and I'll probably be talking to you guys and then this breakdown. Because in the heat of the moment, it was quite surreal. It was like a movie, because the way I found him was, he was in a news story. So he had got arrested, was on this news story, in addition to other people who'd all got arrested. And I had to call the police to try and track him down. And so while I was launching the Push program in Washington, D.C., I was speaking to the police in the morning. They would pass me on to different prisons. And then finally I managed to get to his parole officer. And that was where I was able to identify where he was. And that was when the parole officer put me on a phone call with next of kin, my auntie. And that's when she confirmed that he'd passed away the week before. So that was how it all came about. But speaking to my auntie, she was like, "Damn, is that you?" Like this really cool Southern American accent, and that was where we got to unpack this family that I didn't know existed. And I was able to come back at Christmas with my mum and sisters and meet everyone. And it was mind-blowing, you know, because there's similar mannerisms, you know, similar sense of humor, but never met them before. And they were just blown away that how much I looked like my dad, acted like him, spoke like him, but never seen him before.
Mm. Wow.
So it was a real, real experience.
Well, we won't go down the whole nature or nurture.
Nurture, right.
But that's a whole other conversation. I just wanted to not rush over that moment because, because it's a moment that deserves honour and deserves space. So you're in Washington, and take us on from there.
Yeah, so I've got to say one thing, actually, which I think is very important. Ironically, like before being able to find him, I did have a dream, like maybe 6 months before, where in this dream, I actually meet him and we're talking about our family, like our heritage. And I was just like, wow, this is so profound. And it's amazing to learn all of this stuff about the family.
Mm.
And then I wake up and it feels like it's like a thought or like a small voice like in my head thinking like, you know, how powerful that was to learn about my family tree. But then a question comes to me. It's like how powerful that is, but how much more powerful it is to know who you are in Christ, and like how powerful it is to know your identity in Christ was that question that came to me. Like, you know, and I think that was something that has stuck with me ever since is, you know, everything that we know about our family and everything else, it does make up a bit of who we are, you know. And it's a powerful thing to then understand like our spiritual heritage as well, and what that DNA and that makeup that helps construct who we are as well, you know. And,
we really focus on that in some ways in our ministry, finding out your spiritual heritage as well as your physical heritage. And I just think how important it was to know Jesus' heritage. I mean, the Bible spells it out in great detail to know. Do you want to say about our spiritual heritage?
No, you carry on.
I can carry on. Well, I discovered, and I encourage people to go back and ask your grandparents, because you can only go back a couple of generations to get it, really. And so I asked my parents, and my great-great-grandparents were a young married couple walking around London. They didn't know Jesus, and they met this man who led them to Jesus, and his name was William Booth.
Oh, well, I know William Booth.
And I remember telling Andrew and Daniela when they were quite small.
Just before you carry on, I know a lot of people, especially in America, we say this, and they have no idea who William Booth is.
Well, then,
so do you want to just fill in?
William Booth is founder of the Salvation Army.
Yeah, there you go.
So, and I remember when I told them, it was like, something lit up, even though they weren't hugely aware of who he was. And I sometimes think that we focus so much on the curses of the generations that we don't find the blessing to walk into. And if we would only focus on the blessing, it would drive lots of the curses away.
Yeah, definitely. You're right.
So anyway, you mentioned spiritual heritage, so I took that off on another tangent.
No, it's amazing. It's just, yeah. I mean, that was just...
So do move us on. We'll try to go down too many avenues.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. And so basically after finding out about my dad and having those first conversations with my newfound family members, it was powerful, you know, going back to Dubai where I'm based and just having that soak in, like, you know, my family is partly Native American, so part of my lineage is literally like Native Indian American, and but finding out now was quite profound, in addition to learning about my family, what they do, who they are, and being able to build a relationship with them ever since has been really a real blessing. And at the same time, it also just reinforced what I'm passionate about, you know, is helping young people in what they do, because, you know, there's so many young people who come out of like broken homes and, you know, unfortunate circumstances. And, you know, it just kind of helped propel me to have more drive, because my story reinforces that this can work. And yeah.
What prompted you to leave a successful job with Bloomberg and go independent and start your own course?
Sure. It's a good question. I think for me, it started to get to a point where what I had envisioned had started to become a reality, and it got to the point where it was so overwhelmingly sort of evident that this is everything I really love to do, that I couldn't focus on my day job anymore. You know, every single time we traveled to another country, we were working with young people, and I'd come back to the office, it was like night and day what I really found interesting and where my heart was sort of being tugged to every single day. And so as this became, you know, more and more prominent every day, where we had more meetings, more trips, more volunteers, and organizations growing from, you know, we did 60 young people in 2013 in South London, and now it's 9 countries. It just, and physically it was getting impossible as well. I just didn't have enough holidays in the calendar to be able to go everywhere. So it just got to a position where it naturally progressed from the corporate to going on full time into working with Push and our adventures.
So can you just tell us, what does it look like, this organisation? I mean, we're hearing about it. You've got these, how many young people did you just say in London? 9,000?
No, started off with 60 young people in South London in 2013. Hmm. And then now we're going to 9 countries.
So what is it? What does this organisation look like? Sure. What are they doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, sure. So what we've done is we've tried our best to focus on getting people's time and getting them to commit to working with young people over money. So if I can get someone from Google to sit with a young person in Ghana or in Brazil and unlock their thinking in a way that, you know, they can start seeing what's possible. I would prefer to do that than trying to raise money to do build a classroom or build something of that nature. So my goal is, the more frequently I can get someone in front of someone, and secondly, if I can take you out of your existing environment and expose you to other environments, those two things immediately helps start changing the way you see things. That's what I've come to realize. So what I've been doing is I've been getting teams of people from all over the world, from different backgrounds, it could be different religions, but they're experts in what they do. And then if I can get them to sit in front of a young person and get them to deliver a program around different subject matters, whether that be music, art, business, creative writing, journalism, like basically lots of vocational subjects. If I can get them to sit in front of them, what I found is even in a short space of time, whether it's 3 to 5 days, I can show a young person that anything's possible and spark that desire, that interest in them. Because what we do is, in that short space of time, I'm taking them on a journey. So they would have preconceived ideas of what's possible in a short space of time and in the subject matter. But the way we do it, where we don't really teach but facilitate, they will basically, you know, I'll say to them, okay, guys, we want you to create a business plan, a business idea that would impact the youth in your nation. And just saying that sounds overwhelming, but you'd be surprised in 3 days I can get them to be up, stand in front of the mayor of their town or city and presenting their plan, how they want to impact youth in their nation. Or sometimes we say to the kids, I want you to write a song to this your generation. What words would you say to them? You know, and the slight framework to give them, you'll be surprised how much they can get done and achieve in that space of time. And so when a child goes on that journey in a short space of time and sees what they can accomplish, it sparks the interest, you know. And before you know it, they start thinking anything's possible. Just last 2 weeks ago, we had a session with some young kids in Tanzania, an orphanage. You know, we were just talking to them about building wealth. And we were just trying to just instill some basic principles of how can you make money when you don't have any money, and asking that question and getting them to think for themselves, you know. And by the end of this program, you know, one of the young girls, 12 years old, she's like, okay, I'm going to create my own YouTube channel. I'm going to invite all of you to my concert and I'm going to make this happen. Before you know it, she's nagging the house mistress of the orphanage to make this whole thing come together. But what I'm trying to get at is it's more that we switched it on. Like, she's now thinking in a way that, okay, I can actually do this. And that is half the challenge, to be honest. A lot of times young people, you know, have the energy and attributes, but just need a spark. And that's what pushes. I hope that makes sense.
And it's somebody who believes in them, somebody who is going to give them time and focus. I mean, all these things are... building up your self-confidence and your self-esteem, aren't they? Which you need if you're going to go out there.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And, you know, we do that in lots of different ways. And ultimately, like you just alluded to, it's making things fun and giving them time. You know, it's fascinating. If you allow someone just to speak for a few minutes so they can be heard, already the confidence is up, right? It's... And it's most of the time it's adhering to speaking to people's love languages, right? And that's it. You know, when you're starting to feel some kind of love, you feel like you can take on the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What prompted you to want to try and help other people up? I know, like, I don't know what it was like in your area of finance, but, you know, some areas it's a real dog-eat-dog world and it's all about me getting to the top, taking everyone out, my competition. And then you're wanting to do this other aspect where you're actually trying to proactively raise everyone else up and give them a hand to the next stage and to be successful. You know, I don't know if that's what it was like when you were working in the financial sector. And if it was, what was it like straddling those two different, very different types of cultures?
Sure. Yeah, and I think for me, I kind of, so the reason I mentioned at the beginning that I was just reading the newspaper with, and it talks about e-commerce is because I honestly feel like it was like, I was very fortunate to be drawn to that news article because the journey that I've been on has all been about training and teaching. In the capacity of Bloomberg, the company is about training and educating. So, you know, we literally spend hours talking to clients about, you know, their job and how technology can help them do their job better and evaluate things. We have to teach them about concepts. And I think it's been a real blessing to learn that. And, you know, being taken to different countries across Africa and having to help them understand, you know, about our products and sophisticated side of it, you know, be like, ah, Richard, this one, I don't understand. You're blowing this English with me. Like, I don't know what are you saying? So I had to like learn how to like, just try and make things simple. about finance. Yeah. And you know, from there, it nicely complemented the heart for young people as well. So it's like, hold on a second. Like, I struggle with learning things first time around. So you need to break it down for me. And I remember there was a pastor that said, you know, when you're ever putting money into a bank or investing it somewhere, you should not be ashamed to ask them to draw out everything that they're trying to sell to you, right? You know, be comfortable having like big, you know, get them to bring out the crayons and everything and draw it out until it makes sense. And that really resonated with me, that to be bold in asking those questions and not, you know, feeling ashamed if you don't know anything. And that's a big thing they say in Bloomberg, that there's never such thing as a stupid question. Yeah. And this is where it comes from. You know, our customers, you know, as you mentioned, is a dog-eat-dog world, but the slant that we come from is we're trying to educate, train in that universe, and then, it, you know, go into different countries around the world. It then took it to another level, and it's like, wow, you know, how do I help make this really easy to understand? And then finance, I struggle with, even though I was a client-facing, you know, it was like, okay, how do I break this down to anyone? And that's where this all came about.
Mm. You know, one of the things I say to people is, if you're clever, if you can't take what you're clever in and make it simple enough for a child to understand, you're not clever.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you. 100%.
Because, I mean,
forget a child, for me to understand.
Yeah, well, something like that. But I think it's something that people don't think of. And when you said that, now how can I break it down?
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, that.
I massively appreciate people that we know that are geniuses. But when you speak to them, it's like, I can understand everything you're saying. Like,
sure. Yeah.
So
it's
I
true.
Should imagine there's no shortage of young people on this planet. How do you find, or how do you choose the people who are going to, do you use the word mentor or talk with them, whatever you do? How do you find those people?
Sure. It's all been through relationships, actually. Obviously, it's very sensitive and fragile when you're working with young people in general, you know, when it comes to safeguarding and, you know, just, you know, the intricacies of building these relationships. So the model we've taken is, can we cultivate these relationships in partnerships with other organizations? And that's how we've been able to move so quickly. So, and wide. So we basically aim to work with, you know, a organization that already works with young people. And we want to complement that, that environment, or that existing program offering. So where we specialize is, you know, the company, for example, the organization is you know, caring for young people, and it could be just an orphanage, or it could be a youth center. It could be multidimensional. But what a lot of places will struggle to do is bring the world of work to young people. You know, so I want to be that sort of bridge for lots of organizations. Like, okay, so you want to bring someone in who's a specialist in the movies industry, like a producer, director. Oh, I can call someone, because I've created this network of friends all over the world. Where, you know, one of my very good friends of mine, he worked on the Avengers film, for example. You know, I've got friends who are in the music industry. You know, and these all, you know, predominantly just Christians, but they've just, we've got to build friendships over the last sort of 15 years. So now I'm like, okay, awesome. So we can help bring these people again to your young people. Let's cultivate a program that ignites that vision, that passion. And we have our way of doing that. And then, you know, boom, we can get ready to create further programming afterwards. And every year we were traveling back to these countries, and obviously leveraging off the relationship with these partners who already are, you know, working with these young people. So that's how we were able to understand how they're getting along, and keep in touch with those guys. and basically build from there. So that's kind of how it's structured.
Can you tell us a success story? Tell us about one, be anonymous, young boy or young girl. Can you track
this? Yeah, sure. There's quite a few. I mean, in South Africa, we work with a shelter that basically is girls that are trafficked or sexually abused. And in there, there's one girl in particular who, you know, she was 12 years old at the time. So this is about 4 or 5 years ago now, 5 years ago. And then we did this, it's called Push Got Talent. So it's one way that we get the kids to start not being too like shy and fearful of who they are, what they like to do. So we invite all of them. It's like, hey, you know, we're ready to give like £200 out here for the win of this competition. So obviously that's where you start seeing everyone go, okay, if I'm getting £200, I'll come up and I'll show something. Yeah. And so I remember this girl coming up and singing and basically most of the room started crying, you know, and her voice was angelic. And, you know, she didn't know where her dad was because he had some kind of illness and basically was moving around from hospital to hospital. And her mom had passed away when she was young, and her brother is in another shelter. So basically meeting this girl where she's at, she's got this unbelievable gift and no support unit, just at this house group. And over the last 4 years, you know, we've been able to work with her to get to a point where she's recorded a song. She's not in a shelter anymore. She's now with her auntie, and she's on this journey of trying to build her music career, but also be able to like be full-time education. And basically we support her as well. And to see her grow and blossom, I'll see if I can send you a video, but you'll see we've managed to pair it up so you can see what she was like at 12, shy. She cried because she was so shy and fearful of what she has, I guess, in hindsight. And then seeing her 4 years later with her belting out, singing with confidence and, you know, believing in herself. And irrespective of all her challenges, you know, she's a real fighter, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she updates us on where her and her brother are because they don't always get to spend time with each other. But to be that young and be in those circumstances is not easy. We've got young kids in Ghana. You know, where we work in the villages in Ghana, they don't even have like power. So in the schools, you know, their IT classes is on the chalk blackboard. So, you know, they're working through Microsoft Office on chalk, like, you know, there's no computers. You know, the average salary of the kids we work with is about $50 a month where we work. Mm-hmm. And seeing some of the kids transition from there and going on to university and be able to, you know, get into a position where they can start applying for jobs over this last, it's been 6 years from some time we started with them, has been unbelievable because literally, you know, from a position where they're literally 2,000 people in the community, it's about 200 kids in total that basically go into the school there, one school with no light, nothing. Mm-hmm. And then seeing some of these students going on to head into the city to make something of themselves has been a real journey for us because we did get some PCs down there, but it's just the programs and them believing in us and building those relationships with them that's been amazing. Because, you know, unfortunately, in some of these instances, you know, where they should be getting normal funding from the government, these kids have nothing really to work with. It's like you might as well tie their hands behind their back, you know.
So we've seen
quite a lot of cool stuff in all different countries that we're in, but those two particular ones, you know, Ghana one, they really are like where we are in that particular village is nothing. They don't have anything, and this one particular girl, in you know, again, just working with nothing, you know, and being able to make that progress has been something that's been mind-blowing for us.
Yeah, I love it. It's always great when you hear of people or see other people doing what they can to give others a hand up. And I know we've had a few guests on here who talked about the struggle they had getting to the position they're in now, because other people weren't willing to help open doors for them. And it was just the fight, and they just had to slog it to get to where they are. And they're successful now, but you know, they take the time now to try and reach back and help other people to be successful. And so it's, we don't see it very often where you see people who are really successful helping others, opening doors for them, giving them the opportunities. So I really appreciate that about what you're trying to do is, you know, you're not just helping to build people up in confidence and mentalities and stuff like that, but you're also saying, look, let me open some doors for you to give you a chance to really step forward and take the opportunities. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, one of the things that I say from time to time, it is to younger people, is the door that God has given me should be open for you to find your path.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the kind of phrase I used, and I think everybody's door needs to be open for other people to find their path.
Yeah,
which is what you're doing. So, so you come this far. Do you have any dreams beyond this? Where do you see it going? Because you're a pioneer person. You're not going to be happy saying, right, yeah, done. Well, we're all good.
And we're talking about one element here, but Richard's got like five or six different things that he's juggling.
Definitely. We're going to do another episode called All the Things Richard Doesn't Do, because that would be quicker.
Yeah, or we could do one called Juggling with Richard.
Yeah, Juggling with Richard, yeah. So where do you see this going to from here? What's the next stage? What do you want to see happen?
Yeah, I mean, we're really, really excited that the next chapter, because we see that this is an opportunity to really level the playing field for a lot of young people. So a lot of the students that we work with around the world, they're restricted, as we've alluded to before, whether that be financially or whether that be, you know, just by other mitigating circumstances. But what we've come to realize is, you know, and this kind of consummates everything that we discussed already, is that, you know, everyone has a way of learning, and that unlocks that helps contribute towards unlocking your potential. And so we found that, you know, the way technology's evolved and the way school is done these days, if I can build technology that basically helps young people with learning about entrepreneurship, investing, preparing you with soft skills and critical skills for the world of work and your future, if I can do that in a fun way, if I can do that in a way that's engaging, then that could, again, create like leaders and entrepreneurs for the future that not really having to go down the natural school route, but basically get them down a pathway that they're interested in, and help them, irrespective of where they are, what they're doing, we can get them to build something that, you know, helps them change their narrative. So we're doing that through artificial intelligence and gaming. So basically you'll be able to log into our platform, and you know, you're going to be experiencing everything through this immersive experience of artificial intelligence, AR, and gaming. and it's going to personalize the learning experience to you as a student. And we can have it in multiple languages as well. So then what happens then is a student could be on their laptop at 4 a.m. and be learning. It could be 1 o'clock in the afternoon. As long as they've got a laptop or a device and internet, they can be learning about different subject matters. And if I can get that to kids all over the world and get them certificates from different companies, you know, even if their curriculum is not recognized, you know, by, you know, more established or developed countries, the fact that they've received a certificate from Puma, HSBC, KPMG, these are partners, you know, they can put that on their CV and say, hey, I've done this program with these companies and create an opportunity for them.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I know it's crazy early for you where you are at the minute. Thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it. It's fascinating. I know there's something that when we first met you, we connected on because we're a lot about seeing young people raised up and equipped and empowered to do things. And that's what you're trying to do. So I know we connected over that initially. And so we've really appreciated that and being able to get to know you. So thank you, Richard. We appreciate it. And you have to come back and we can talk more about one of the other 8 or 9 other things that you've got going on.
Yeah, thank you, definitely, Richard.
Definitely,
so
definitely, definitely. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Richard.
Awesome.
Appreciate
thank you. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If it inspired you, please rate us and subscribe on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or another podcast platform.